Training and the Cross Trek, this week on Mail Call Mondays. I'm John McQuay with 8541 Tactical, and this is Mail Call Mondays, the show that answers your questions about precision rifles, optics, and equipment. Welcome to another Mail Call Mondays, and this Monday our first question comes from Charles, and Charles asked, did the training you received in the Corps fully prepare you for PRS competitions and your LEO career? Were there a lot of new techniques you had to learn, and were there any bad habits you had to work on? Well, Charles, that's a great question. For those of you guys that don't know, my previous life, I was a United States Marine Corps Scout Sniper. I was a jungle warfare instructor, did a few other things in the Marine Corps. But I came out of the Marine Corps with a very, very keen understanding of precision rifle marksmanship. Now, the main thing the Marine Corps gave me was marksmanship. The Marine Corps, through the Scout Sniper program, also gave me a lot of information and skills on concealment and kind of how humans look for targets, how you search targets out, how you locate targets. And that all kind of translates over to law enforcement sniping as well. Law enforcement precision rifle shooters need to know how to conceal their positions for obvious reasons. If you're concealed, it makes it very hard for someone to actually find you and shoot at you. So the concealment portion of it definitely translated over. But there are some significant differences in the accuracy requirements of a law enforcement shooter versus a Marine Corps Scout Sniper. There are quite a few differences in the range, the long-range shooting aspect of it. Law enforcement shooters really are not what I would consider long-range shooters. Most of the engagements will be in relatively intermediate to close range, and this is because of legal reasons. It's very difficult to justify why a target 1,000 yards away from you was a threat, especially when that target may be armed with an intermediate weapon, a carbine or a handgun. Law enforcement officers have to justify their actions by a different set of rules than military snipers do. So one of the biggest things in making the transition from a Marine Corps sniper to a law enforcement sniper is understanding the legal justifications, understanding the case law, the rulings that cover what you can and can't do, the justifications for lethal force. The justifications for the lethal force for a precision rifle shooter in the law enforcement area are a little bit different than they are for the average patrol officer. So that could be a whole week-long topic, so it's not really something that I can get into the details on this video. There's nothing secret about it because every single one of the rules that we have to follow come from public cases that were fought out in court. There's really no secret stuff to law enforcement precision rifle shooting. But for PRS competitions, we switch over to a totally different aspect of it. Now, you have to remember that I went through the Marine Corps back in the day when we had internal magazine, five-shot rifles with fixed 10-power scopes on them. So the equipment has changed greatly, and with that, there was a big shift in the Marine Corps to more urban-type engagements because of the battlefields that snipers were fighting in. So the tactics have changed considerably, and the training has changed considerably since when I went through those courses. And now they are concentrating more on improvised positions and more urban environments, and that translates over more to PRS-type competition. In fact, quite a few of the Marine Corps schoolhouses have instructors that also, on their own time, shoot PRS-style matches. So they're taking these skills that they learned there as far as the improvised shooting positions, and they're able to bring those back to the schoolhouse and give a little bit more insight. And I think it's absolutely phenomenal because that allows shooters to be more flexible. Now, law enforcement side of things as well, we do see a lot of law enforcement precision rifle shooters show up at PRS type competitions, and this has been growing. I've seen more and more shooters show up. Unfortunately, you still do see a lot of departments that are hesitant to send their snipers to competitions because there has normally been a division between competition and training. Now, I will be the first to admit that competitions are not a replacement for training. Competitions should not be considered training. What competition should be considered, though, is a place to test your skills. Because if something is not working in competition, then you can come back and you can look at that and go, does that correlate to something that I'm going to encounter in the field on the street in a live call out, and then you can evaluate that. Competitions are shot in the rain, in the snow, in the mud, all kinds of nasty conditions that a law enforcement sniper may go through his entire career and not be called out into. So going through this really tests your gear, tests your equipment, it tests your mindset and your ability to improvise and adapt on the fly. And that is a critical skill for a police sniper. So I really want to see more departments actually send their shooters out. But there's also an ego aspect of it, because a police sniper is usually a type A personality. We like being good at what we're good at. We don't like sucking. That's pretty frankly, that's what it is. So taking a experienced law enforcement shooter and putting him into a civilian competition environment where he may not do the best, that's kind of a bit of an ego check, because when people that don't do this for a living, that are just doing it as a hobby, beat you, sometimes that can sting a little bit. But that's necessary for personal growth and personal enhancement. So you see where you got beaten at. And if it's applicable to something on the street, then you fix that and you drive on, or you decide I need to get out and train a whole lot more. The other flip side of it is police snipers, believe it or not, do not shoot anywhere near as much ammunition as your average PRS competition shooter. They're out training. If you're talking about guys that are in the top third to even top half of the pack at a large PRS match, those guys are going to shoot far, far, far more ammo in a year than your average law enforcement shooter. And that's just law enforcement budgets. It's time concerns. That's life. So there are some things that my military training and my law enforcement training has translated over to PRS and vice versa. And then there are a lot of things that are different. The basics of marksmanship, the trigger control, breathing, sight alignment, sight picture, all that stuff, that was built in the Marine Corps. I got the basics there. I got the basics with ballistics, how to calculate range to target, how that adjusts, a little bit of wind reading, wind calls. That was all built in the Marine Corps. And then as I went along, it's been fine-tuned. Some things about ballistics that I was taught in the Marine Corps have since been I've found to be untrue or exaggerated, or the rule of thumb that they quoted did not actually work for anything other than one specific circumstance. So you have to be willing to evolve and reevaluate what you were taught and what you know, and frame it in new light when you encounter new situations. So, great question, Charles. I hope that gave you some answers that you were looking for and a little bit of insight. And our next question comes from Vince, and Vince asks, fitness for shooting. Do you have a good exercise plan for building and keeping strength and agility for a PRS comp? Well, Vince, fitness is really important, not just for shooting, but for your whole life. Obviously, and I'm not big into going out and doing constant weight training. I enjoy weight training. I just don't have the time to go actually do bodybuilding type stuff or any of that. I have neglected the weight room for a while for more moderate cardiovascular stuff, because that allows me to keep a good level of fitness with a minimum amount of input, judging with all the other stuff or balancing out with all the other stuff that I have to do in my lifetime. However, if you have plenty of time and you are just going to focus on fitness that will assist you in competition shooting, then I would highly suggest looking into CrossFit. Now, I am not a big CrossFit fan, but there are correlations with the things that you do in CrossFit and the things that you would do in a competition. There's a lot of movement around. There are some ballistic movements. There's jumping up, down, that kind of thing, different positions, burpees, all that fun junk. And there is moving some moderate weights around, which a precision rifle is not a lightweight device. So you are moving a weight around and you're shifting it into different positions. So things that you do in CrossFit to include the cardiovascular parts of CrossFit will translate over to precision rifle shooting. If you're not a big CrossFitter, then I would recommend getting out and running or just even getting out and walking. Anything that you're going to do to improve your cardiovascular fitness is going to reduce that resting heart rate. It's going to give you better recovery from stressful movements, and it's going to allow you to keep your breathing and your heart rate low, which will assist you in engaging long-range targets. So those are just some options. Now, obviously, the standard disclaimers apply. Before you start any kind of physical fitness routine, you should consult with your physician. Make sure that it is appropriate for your age level and your current fitness level. I don't want you to go out and go kill yourself on the first day of CrossFit at a gym, because you really can wear yourself out doing CrossFit, and you can greatly overexert yourself and injure yourself doing something like that. But even going out and running, you can go out and push yourself too hard when you are starting a program, cause an injury. The injury will set you back even further, and you will end up in worse shape coming off the injury than you were before you started out. So make sure you talk to a physician. If you need to, talk to a personal trainer. Get a plan that suits your body type and your goals and go forward. But I would definitely concentrate on cardiovascular versus just pure strength training. And our last question comes from Nasser. And Nasser asks, do you feel the CrossTrek is a good adventure vehicle that works well with outdoor activities? Well, those of you guys that have watched our Facebook feed and our Instagram feed have seen my personal vehicle pop up occasionally. And it is a 2016 Subaru CrossTrek. And this CrossTrek, we purchased it in April of 2016, and it has been all over the country, north, south, east, west. It's been to Vegas a couple of times. It's been to Death Valley. It's been down to Florida, North Carolina. We have been really all over with the thing, and it has been an excellent vehicle. There are some pros and there are some cons to it. The main reason that I chose it is fairly fuel efficient. It's rated to 34 miles per gallon on the highway. That's a little bit optimistic when we actually have it loaded with gear and two adults and coolers and all that stuff in it. We usually get more along the 25 to 27 miles per gallon when we are running at a realistic highway speed. But the really nice thing about it is a comfortable vehicle to go long distances in, but you still have the benefits of all-wheel drive and you still have a higher ground clearance. So when we get out to places like Death Valley, or we get up to Colville, Washington, where we're driving around through cow pastures at the top of a mountain to get to different firing points, or the logging roads in North Carolina that you have to take to get to some of the ranges down there, then it really works out very well. We don't have to worry about getting stuck. It'll go through snow. No problem when we're jammed up in Flagstaff in a blizzard. So it really has been a great overall vehicle. Now, there are some drawbacks to it. First of all, the interior space is fairly small. Usually when we're traveling cross-country, it is just me and Sarah, and we have the benefit of laying the back seats down and utilizing the whole cargo area for gun bags and clothing bags and cooler and all the other stuff. When we are going as a whole family, myself, Sarah, and our two children, then it becomes a little bit tighter. When we go on backpacking trips and that, a lot of times we are really packing the gear in, and I recently ended up buying a rack for the back of it that goes in the trailer hitch that'll allow us to put more stuff on the outside, and of course it has a rack on top that we can strap stuff down there. I haven't actually got a basket for the rack on top or for the crossbars on top, but that is a possibility should we need to do that. Overall, the maintenance on the vehicle has been great. We haven't had any issues with it. I have recently crossed 45,000 miles on it, I believe, and we have replaced one set of tires, the factory tires on it. We did replace it with some 15-inch wheels and some more aggressive all-terrain tires that are still really quiet on the road, so it continues to be just a great vehicle. One of the coolest features on it, and we're going to drone on too long on the CrossTrek, is it does have what they call their EyeSight system in it, which is an adaptive cruise control and collision avoidance system. So it's got two little cameras that look forward, and those cameras will watch for obstacles in the roadway, but they also allow you to turn on the cruise control and set a pre-set following distance. And as you approach cars on the roadway, you run up behind a rolling roadblock, etc., then the cruise control will reduce speed to match the speed of the vehicles in front until the way is clear. When the way is clear, it will run you back up to your regular cruise speed. Now, the really cool thing about it is, in stop-and-go traffic, it will actually bring your speed all the way down to a dead stop, and then you just thumb the resume wheel, and it will bring you back up. So when you're in that slow, crawling, slinky traffic that you sometimes run into in road construction in some of these cities, then it's absolutely awesome because the adaptive cruise control will set your following distance and it will keep you matching the speed of the vehicle in front of you. So you're not constantly on the accelerator brake, whatever. And it just, I find that it really allows you to relax quite a bit as you drive. So the Crosstrek has been an absolutely great vehicle for us. I look forward to putting another 60,000 miles at least on the thing. That's it for this Mail Call Mondays. I want to know what you guys have to say about it. Do you like seeing me actually open real mail on here in addition to answering the questions? We definitely want to keep the show going the direction that you want it to go. So leave your comments down in the comments section below or send them to us on Facebook or Twitter. If you like the show, please make sure you like, share, and subscribe. And until next time, get out and shoot!